Hey, this is Otacon. You're listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew right here on thisweekingeek.net. Are you listening? Snake? Snake? Snake!
Yeah. So damn nerdy. I'll take you to the comic shop. I'll show you all the things I try.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to Beyond the Gauntlet, recorded not really live at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario. By the time you hear this, it is Monday, July... hell if I know. I'm in New Jersey, so I don't care. So anyway, I'm not alone. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, one of the many... What am I? Chris?
Producer.
Customer?
Customer, producer,
customer,
nerd.
Producer,
nerd.
That guy. And you are?
I'm Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet Comics and Games.
And we are joined with our two other co-hosts.
He did point at you first.
Fair enough. Jamie McBurney, patron of the Gauntlet.
I'm Jeff Dehan, and another patron of the Gauntlet. If you want to follow us on Twitter, by the way, yes, this is a shameless plug. Check out at Gauntlet Podcast. That's right, shameless plug.
And we're one of the only Twitters in Orangeville. Actually, I think I was actually talking with the mayor and one of the counselors on Twitter, saying you realize we have a robot monkey army loaded from here, and if you don't submit to our rule, we will take you over. And they said, fine, as long as it doesn't interfere with council business, we can rule Orangeville through our military might of our robo monkeys.
Which would probably be an upgrade.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, Orangeville police, nothing against them, but what are you going to do? We got friggin' robo-monkeys.
Are they flying robo-monkeys?
They can be.
Next year.
We will be upgrading. That's the upgrade.
Robo-monkeys version 2.0.
Fly, my pretties, fly.
That's how we are going to roll here. Also, in addition, yeah, it's been a few weeks since we've done a show. Life just kind of gets in the way, as it most often does. And in an effort to be more network-friendly, we're going to be PG-13. Mostly because somebody complained. You suck. But what are we talking about today, guys?
Relationships and comic books, and do they work?
Well, that depends on how you want to look at it. I mean, where do we start with that? I mean, when you think of people in comic books, in love, in relationships, who are the big three?
Well, there's Lois Lane and Superman.
Yep, there's one.
There's Mary Jane and Peter Parker.
And who would be the third
one? Well, and I would argue Sue and Reed Richards.
I would say Gambit and Rogue would be the
okay,
one that
I'd be, yeah, that'd be another backup.
That's fair. And it's kind of personal choice, really.
Yeah.
It's whatever people like. I feel that Sue and Reed, they're kind of like the first family, you know, the first couple of comic books, because they've clearly been together the longest. And aside from the occasional trip to the sea for Sue, little Namor joke there, they've been, you know, fairly steady and stable. So.
And they do kind of incorporate the entire family aspect that the comic is trying to throw off as the Fantastic Four, mm-hmm. as the family of characters that fights crime.
Yeah.
But I think the most iconic out of them is definitely going to be the Lois Lane Superman aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which connects back, and I wanted to ask you guys to start off with this. Like, what do you guys think, if you were going to individually target, like, one example of a relationship in comics that really shows how relationships in comics can work? Because if we think about, comics are different than any other medium, right? You got, like, 60, 70 years of history, depending mm-hmm. on the character. You've got something that's happening on month-to-month basis. Coffee. And you've got all these different elements. So if you guys were going to identify like a relationship that works in comics, what were you going to...
I would start with Spider-Man and Mary Jane, Peter mm-hmm. Parker, because they, when there's a problem, they talk it out.
Nice, yeah.
And mm-hmm. there's something more real about the way that they handle their relationships in the comics. The fact that it seems more like there's more at stake as opposed to Superman and Lois Lane. Like, what are you going to do to Superman? Spider-Man, his enemies frequently target his loved ones. He's already lost one with Gwen Stacy. Mm-hmm. So he knows the vulnerability of his family.
It's a reflection of the fact that Spider-Man has always kind of been portrayed as the everyman superhero.
Right, yeah. Yep.
You know, like, despite these fantastic powers that he has, he's always been very grounded and very realistic. And I feel like his relationships reflect that and are also very grounded and very realistic.
And there are a number of times in the comics where Mary Jane has basically tossed the ultimatum down to Spider-Man. It's you got to choose me or your hero. You know, mm-hmm. you being the hero. And, you know, Spider-Man always hums and haws, and there's the occasional time he gives it up for a while, but he always goes back to being the hero, and mm-hmm. Mary Jane always seems to get over it and end up back with him. So, I mean, it's when you think iconic relationships, not only do you have the aspect of the relationship where she's in jeopardy from the villain, so Spider-Man has to be the hero,
right.
but you also do have the effect of the relationship where Spider-Man actually has to be Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Which, again, connects to more like the superhero thing. So, Chris, would you say, for you, is it Spidey?
I would say Spidey is one of the more memorable ones. The problem is, currently in the comic books, and it hasn't been for a few years, Spider-Man and Mary Jane have disintegrated. Ever since Mary Jane stepped up to bat
sort of thing?
Yeah. In One More Day, and basically...
Aunt May lived, okay? Back off.
Yeah. And basically threw the relationship under the Mephisto truck.
You know,
so.
It's not even that the relationship ended that I have issue with. It's that...
Do you have problems with Satan showing up in a Spider-Man book?
You're the Lord of the Underworld. You're the Lord of the Underworld. And what do you want? It's like, I want you... to get a divorce.
No, he's like, I want your marriage. It's rather abstract, but still, you know, I've got standards.
It's lonely in hell.
I'm just going to stare at it for kicks.
You know, well, mind you, this was a point in Peter Parker's life where it was after the Civil War. He basically came out of the proverbial superhero closet and admitted right. who he was to the world. He had every sniper, gunman, would-be lunatic. Crook, and lunatic gunning for his family. I mean, there was a reason why he made the deal, and it was to protect his family in the long run. That Mary Jane remembered the entire thing after One More Day into Brand New Day just serves to show the amount of love she had for Peter Parker, because she chose to remember everything they had and carry it forward, even though they knew they could never have it again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, how about you?
So that's the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea.
Mine's probably Spider-Man. Like, the thing is, actually, no.
Thank you. I was afraid I'd have to go against the...
No. I actually, one that it's an on-again, off-again relationship, and actually the male in this relationship is with actually quite a few comic characters, has kind of been with various ones, but... I will always stand by Nightwing and Batgirl or
nice.
Oracle.
Yes.
I'll even stick with, you know, because I don't care if she's Batgirl or if she's in the wheelchair, she's Oracle. I've always loved that relationship. And even actually in an issue that Kevin Smith did of his Widening Gyre book, he actually had Nightwing. There was a flashback because it gave them a chance to draw other villains.
Right.
All
right.
That. But as Batman was coming out of this remembering a time he was fighting with Dick as Robin, Nightwing says, you know, it's always been Barbara. I know there was Starfire and, you know, Huntress, but it's always been Barbara. And I won't lie, when I read that panel, I was like, yes!
Yeah, if you guys have ever read any of the Chuck Dixon Nightwing stories...
Fabulous.
They're amazing. The trades are outstanding, mm-hmm. and he nails the relationship.
Perfect.
There are so many great moments in that, like when the tower, Oracle Tower, is under siege. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. it was in No Man's Land, maybe, or it was another series.
Yeah, because No Man's Land, everything went to hell, and I remember...
And Nightwing fights to get up to the tower, and that's just mm-hmm. a really, really cool moment. And there's there's a lot of great back and forth between the characters, and even no matter what stage they're at, they sort of, they nail that sort of element.
And it's cool
because
they kind of brought back, after Infinite Crisis, they kind of came back to that where Dick actually proposed to Barbara, sort of out of the blue, and then after the 1 year later that they did, that little gimmick, they weren't together, so you had to find out why. And it wasn't until they had a Nightwing annual from like another year or two later that you actually found out what happened. And as it turns out, Babs is the one that broke it off. But that's a relationship that I'm like, you know what? Forget Starfire, forget all the rest. That's my favorite comic book relationship.
And it's almost like Batman's mentoring it, where he's like, yes, my pupils, get together. I'm Batman.
There you go.
Everything I do is perfect. And for me, this is like... My choice is a little left to center, but it's probably by far my favorite relationship. Is from DC Comics, Mr. Miracle and Big Barda.
Oh, love it!
I love the dynamic of these characters. I love everything that it stands for. So the whole deal is Mr. Miracle. Was in DC Comics, there's New Genesis and Apocalypse, which are basically heaven and hell in the in their sort of pantheon, semi-religious space pantheon. There's a term you can only use in comics, right? Mr. Miracle ends up being basically the two worlds' trade sons. Mr. Miracle goes over, he's from New Genesis, and he goes to Apocalypse, and Apocalypse sends Orion over to New Genesis. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Miracle, at the time, basically befriends one of his captors who's in charge, one of the female Furies, who are like the women, the battle women of Apocalypse. And they fall in love, and they have this great relationship where this like little wiry guy and this gigantic,
life, if you will.
Yes, like just ass-kicking female character, 7 foot tall.
She's huge.
She's awesome. And the dynamics that these characters have, I mean, even from day one, when you read some of the old, like, it was Jack Kirby, I think, did some of the original stuff, the Fourth World stuff. Mm-hmm. The dynamic that these characters have is just awesome. Like, you just look at this, and it's one of those things that you look at, and you're like, yeah, of course these characters are meant for each other, you know? There's no other possible connection between
the two. They're such opposites they attract.
Exactly.
And, you know, and they've never had any issue or anything like that. There are a couple that's just, that's who they are.
Exactly.
You know, there's never been any kind of love triangle with the two of them. It's always just been, it's them, they're in it together, and that's it. And they're actually probably my two favorite new gods. I was so sad. What was it? It was before Countdown or Infinite Crisis.
The Death of the New Gods.
Barda was the first one to go. Yeah, I was just so mad about that.
Talk about a comic that can bring a tear to your eye based off the status of the relationship.
And I love Jim Starlin so much, but then he goes and does that. But
so good, though.
But yeah, I mean, those characters are just so really awesome. And if you guys ever get a chance, they've never collected it in trade, but they did a Mr. Miracle comic series in the late 80s and early 90s, just after like the Justice League International got popular.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And it's all about Mr. Miracle and Big Barda living in suburbia.
Oh,
and
yes.
It is so good because it's just them living in suburbia, having a healthy relationship, and crazy stuff keeps happening.
They kind of touch on that in the Superman Batman book that came out a couple of years ago because they had to travel to Apocalypse.
Yes.
So they approached Barda, and I remember them, you know, they knock on the door. It's in the middle of suburbia, and Barda, she can barely even fit in the door frame, you know, and it's just picturing the two of them in suburbia is just perfect, and yet at the same time so kind of weird, unnaturally perfect. There we go.
Yeah, that's if that was that would for. Be what it was. And I mean that's the reason for like when I read my vows at my wedding, I read them out of a Mr. Miracle comic because I'm like this
wonderful,
was
sir.
I know,
wonderful.
I'm such a sap.
I applaud you for that one.
But it was pretty hardcore. It's just a really really yeah, it's a really cool idea of what comic characters can be, and when you get that chemistry right.
All right, we've established that there are definitely some relationships at work, and I'm sure we could list them off like nobody's business.
For
now,
sure.
Which ones have failed horribly? which relationships do they continually try shoving down your throat and have no point whatsoever to them?
Anything with Wolverine?
Well, see, it kind of gets to a point where, because there's certain characters that they just kind of flip-flop from one to the other. I mentioned that with Nightwing, and Batman sort of does that, but that's because no woman is ever going to replace Justice in Batman's heart.
That's his true love.
Yep.
Anything with Scott Summers recently? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything with Scott Summers ever, let's
no,
be honest.
No, Scott Summers just has a thing for the psychic, so that's it, because he had Jean Grey, and now he has Emma Frost. So, mm-hmm. You know, he knows what he wants.
Does Daredevil know what he wants?
No. No, Daredevil does not know what he wants.
Hey, let's roll around in bed. Guess what? I'm Daredevil.
Well, the really interesting thing about Daredevil, and I don't know if you guys are reading the new Mark Waid series, which is unbelievably good.
Fantastic.
And it builds off of a lot of the stuff that was happening in the old Bendis stuff and then the Brubaker stuff after that. The really cool thing that I've noticed, so Daredevil is one of those characters who's had a lot of romantic connections over his history, right? There was Elektra, there was Typhoid Mary, there was, I forget what the there was a Bendis introduced a new love interest. I can't remember her name.
Was it Karen Page?
No, Karen Page was before that. But there was another one in the Bendis series, and she was also blind, and that was sort of the connection that they made.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't remember her name. But the really cool thing that I've been enjoying about the new Daredevil series is that they go back and they reflect on those.
Yes.
Like, he references it. You will occasionally go back and you will meet his old girlfriend, whose name we unfortunately can't remember, in the asylum where she is.
Yep.
And there's that connection to it.
So in other words, all these past failed relationships aren't for nothing.
Yeah, and
they're shaping him now in current comics.
Yeah, so I think those there's a capacity to like build on it, and it's interesting to look at, like, that's one option for doing it is looking at and building off of that history. And then there's the other one, which I think, Chris, you were getting at, which is like, there are ones where they just want to say, hey, look, now they're in love with somebody else.
Yeah, it seems like there's an empty, hollow feel to the relationship, because it just looks like they're like, hey, we got this character and this character, let's stick them together. And
so can I not be the DC negative fanboy who's going to bring this up if we're talking about ham-handed, crammed together?
You
characters?
Can go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I have the issue.
Give us some examples
right
of this.
Here,
well, Superman and Wonder Woman.
Issue number 12.
Issue number 12. Score. That was like that. That's probably been the most recent DC Comics, you know, attempt to get on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they've got Superman 75 on CNN, and they're like, let's keep pushing these big things.
Yeah.
So the cover of Justice League 12, you've got Superman and Wonder Woman making out in a, and it's like, it doesn't even happen until the like last page of the book, right?
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be the big moment. But I always find with that relationship, and this is my personal understanding of it, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys have to say, that people who, oh God, please don't show that to me. it's just ridiculous. But I always find that writers tend to pair up Superman and Wonder Woman when they look at Superman only as a set of powers. If you think of Superman just as a set of powers, as the strongest man in the world, then of course he has to be with the only person who is equal to him as a power. But when we go back to what we're talking about,
they do this a lot, though, because this isn't the first time that Superman and Wonder Woman have been paired up together. I mean, this happens in DC's history quite a lot.
Yeah, Kingdom Come, Miller's work,
Red Sun.
Yeah. Miller's work. I don't know if he actually hadn't touched on it at all in Dark Knight Returns, but in his All-Star Batman and Robin Boy Wonder,
yeah,
he definitely did. He had them making out at one point. So
now I think part of the current reincarnation of this travesty is due to part and parcel that when DC planned the New 52 and shot it out a couple Septembers ago,
mm-hmm,
they said that they were not going to put Lois Lane and Superman together for possibly indefinitely.
Right.
Okay, so a lot of this was a marketing choice, because they were tired of Lois Lane and Superman constantly being crammed down your throat. And it got to the point, I think, with the Superman-Lois Lane relationship where it lost the point of the relationship.
I think it lost the humanity.
It lost the humanity. And when you're dealing with a character who's struggling to keep his humanity, to show that he's human, that this was just a bad thing. It got to the point where Lois Lane was just there to be saved.
Yeah, they were just going through the paces, basically.
Exactly.
There's actually a new DC animated movie. It came out probably last month or so, called Superman Unbound.
Yeah.
And it's where he fights Brainiac. And this is what made me hate Lois Lane as a character, at least in this particular incarnation. She gets kidnapped by these terrorists. They take her on a helicopter. He's like, do you know who you just kidnapped? And it's that thing you just said, I'm just here to be saved. I don't see, at least with, say, the Smallville incarnation of Superman and Lois Lane, you see the gradual build from adversarial to a loving relationship. To say nothing of Lana Lang, flippity-floppity bitch, because it always goes back and forth. And that's another thing, too, talking about the dysfunction in some of these relationships. Like you just said, Lois is just there to be saved. what's the point? He's just going through the motions now. Because unlike Spider-Man and Mary Jane, you see the attraction. You see mm-hmm. what they were growing together as a couple. With Superman and Lois Lane, it's, I'm going to save you from danger.
I mean, I think the original idea with the Superman-Lois Lane relationship, aside from bringing Superman down to a human level and right. actually having him find love, it was also a way to show that he had another weakness that wasn't kryptonite. And, you know, in a struggling world where everybody seems to have kryptonite, they seem to sell it in every corner grocery store.
In every
they
color.
Wanted to give Superman another weakness, and this weakness was a very human weakness. It was, you would do anything for the one you love. Mm-hmm. But downside, when overplayed and overused, well, it loses everything about it.
I think what the issue might be here, or what it kind of turned into, was that they kind of wrote themselves into a corner to the point where they couldn't go any further. I mean, I've always said that I'm a big fan of the status quo being shaken up a little bit and everything, but after they get together, where do you go from there? Does anybody want to actually delve into the Superman and Lois Lane have a child? You know, does anybody want to go that far? And if they can't, then they're kind of stuck in this sort of state of flux where they can't really go forward or backward unless they retcon the entire universe, which is exactly what they did.
Well, yeah, exactly, because what ends up happening is you start thinking of the physics behind it, and then then that puts different imagery in your mind.
So the Chris mall is, rats.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Chris, mm-hmm. is totally reminding you, it was like the world's worst, like the back cover of a romantic novel. He had only two weaknesses, kryptonite and love.
But it's true, though.
Yeah, and that's like that also connects sort of like to his fundamental humanity, going back and looking at that too, is that like he has these emotions. And I think the challenge with a lot of relationship writing, I think, in superhero comics is not to treat it as like sort of, this connects to what we were all saying, is not to treat it as like this subplot where it's just, oh, now they're in trouble. You know, now the partner's in trouble. See, we got to go save them.
You know what I enjoy most about the Superman Lois Lane relationship? When Lois Lane is taken from him.
Yeah.
Okay, you take stories like, for example, For Tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay, where the Vanishing takes her. And Superman goes to a very dark place because of this. Or you take the Injustice plot line.
Mm-hmm. Right, yep.
Where Superman loses Lois Lane to the Joker's schemes, mm-hmm. and causes Superman to basically fly off the handle. I like Lois Lane more when she's dead. It's kind of funny. It's horrible to say.
Kind of morose, but yeah.
But it causes an effect in the character that is entertaining, and it causes another dimension to appear out of Superman that makes him exciting again.
And here's the question: are you going to get that Superman if he's with Wonder Woman, someone who's arguably just as strong as him?
No, I don't believe so. No, exactly. I
that's a really good point. Yeah,
I 100% feel that the Superman dating Wonder Woman thing is just what Jamie was saying. Oh, they got like powers. Let's put them together.
Now, here's a question.
And done.
Can we turn this on its head? We're all talking about men and their problems. For example, like I said, Spider-Man, Mary Jane, Superman, Lois Lane. Does it go the other way with women having problems with like their men?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because there's tons of relationships in the comic books. Let's take Scarlet Witch and Vision, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, Vision's an android, and somehow Scarlet Witch managed to have kids with him, and then Vision was decommissioned, basically,
well,
for lack of a better term.
Did she actually have kids with him, or were they just kids that she kind of made?
That's the question
thin air.
You have to ask yourself.
All right, get ready to delve into the world of comics.
Exactly. Was this an act of such love between this machine and this woman that they managed to find a way to have children, or was this Scarlet Witch just doing her chaos magic again and causing these kids to just appear?
I think it's both. I think she loved him so much, and she knew that he loved her so much, that she unintentionally or unknowingly willed these children into existence. That's
In other
what
words,
I think.
She managed to have kids with him.
Yeah, fair Just enough.
Her magic was definitely a catalyst in there, one way another. But, I mean, the love between the characters.
I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I was just going to say, I mean, her power is that she can basically create anything. Who's to say she didn't, you know, for a brief period, create the plumbing that he needed to... I mean, we're delving into this realm, but I'm just saying, as far as them having children...
He, you know, it could have been a Pinocchio moment. He became a real boy.
For, yeah.
This is a fascinating conversation. Comics, everybody.
We go from Romeo and Juliet to
other reverse relationships.
And it's tricky to say, and I think we talked about this earlier today when I was in the store. We talked about how comics sort of echo the modern understanding of the world.
Yes.
And that's a really cool thing about the format is that you get the comics in the 50s echoed the social trends and social concepts of the 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way through to now. And we're only now really starting to see comics that aren't necessarily from the perspective of the white middle class male. You know, and again, that's painting with a really broad brush, but we're starting to see.
I mean, look in the past, I'm going to say 10, 15 years, how comics have started to introduce gay couples.
Yep.
They have started
several.
To introduce...
transgendered couples.
Transgender couples. Yeah. They have started to introduce dysfunctional couples to an even greater degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they are definitely echoing society.
And what are you guys thinking if... because just through this discussion, I was reminded of how much I really, really love Peter David's X Factor. If you guys ever get a chance, and anyone listening, if you get a chance, read the current run of Peter David's X Factor. It's wrapping up. I think it's only got 5 more issues left, but it's got 20 books as of right now out. And it is one of the greatest comics for every conceivable type of relationship. You've got same-sex couples, you've got time-displaced couples, you've got should-be couples, you've got never-will couples, you've got...
And every single one of them is with Jamie Madrox.
Exactly.
Well, the guy's multiple, man. You just have to slap himself, and there's two of them. So.
And there's an amazing moment, and I don't want to sort of spoil anything, but that's touched on as mm-hmm. well. Like, he comes home drunk one night and wakes up and realizes, oh, wait, I'm here. Oh, I'm also over there. This is going to be awkward.
I just thought of a really messed up
but
scenario.
But then you get into the whole dysfunctional or abusive relationship side of things. I mean, number one on the table is Joker Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a relationship in the comic books where Joker completely abuses Harley Quinn at every given moment, and Harley Quinn is completely...
in love
awestruck and in love with the Joker, regardless of what happens to
her. And it's really weird, because I've got friends on Facebook among some of my fandom, and they worship Harley Quinn Joker. And these people are in healthy relationships, which is good, but they're worshiping one that is so screwed up.
I agree. Like, I mean, I'm a huge Harley Quinn fan, have been for years, and I can't stand her relationship with the Joker. I hate how abusive he is. I don't even mean this in any kind of a sexual way, but I hands down prefer her relationship with Poison Ivy. Yeah. Even if it's just a best friend thing, because Ivy, whether it's the animated series, the comics, whatever, her main thing is that she's trying to liberate Harley, to give her her own free will again, and kind of break her away from being under Joker's spell.
See, the Joker-Harley Quinn relationship is the perfect relationship of... that echoes real life of the girl that stuck with the for lack of better term, asshole. And she loves this person to the extent, no matter how much abuse she takes, she always goes back to him. And this is just a pure reflection of that. And the funny, the ironic thing in this whole thing is the fact that Harley Quinn is a psychiatrist.
She knows better.
Yeah. She and theoretically she should know better, because she's a person that helped the people through this sort of relationship problem themselves. But as with most advice, it's easier to preach than it is to follow.
The heart wants what the heart wants.
And I think that's what comics do, right? Is they distill a lot of general relationship cliches and concepts down to the crystal essence. Like, if you look at the idea of a dysfunctional relationship, you can't find a more crystal clear example than, the Joker and Harley mm-hmm. Quinn. And I think that's really, that's sort of what comics do, is boil these things down into that crystal essence.
Oh yeah.
And the same thing there's the standard of the dysfunctional relationship, there's the standard of the marriage, like we talked about with Reed and Sue,
mm-hmm.
there's the standard of couples working through things, which is Mary Jane and Spidey, and
perpetual bachelors or
yeah.
bachelorettes with Nightwing, Daredevil,
Iron
She-Hulk,
Man.
Iron Man
yeah.
is a great example.
And why is it that some of those characters, do you think, are not don't have those iconic relationship elements. Like we talked about, Batman's girlfriend basically is Justice.
Well, I feel like maybe it's just, and this is going to sound weird at first since they are fictitious characters, but hear me out. I feel like they're just, the chemistry isn't there. A writer hasn't come up with, you know, the right mold, so to speak, to make it work.
Well, the thing with Batman, though, is Batman, Batman is Bruce Wayne, but he doesn't want to be Bruce Wayne.
Right. Yep,
right. Like so when said. It boils down to that, Batman doesn't want a relationship because he's married to basically the Knight. He's married.
Well, exactly. I am one with the Knight.
Yes, exactly. He doesn't. Anything he does relationship wise is just as show to show people that Bruce Wayne and Batman can't be the same people. So
yet the funny thing with that is, time after time, writers in every medium, TV, movies, comics, everything, have still been throwing relationships at him. Like you look at, you know, from Batgirl, even in the animated series, and when they went into Justice League, they had Wonder Woman.
As Jamie pointed out, though, comics have a tendency to boil things down to their crystal essence, and Batman's crystal essence is he's too busy with work to have a relationship.
And it's really interesting that people keep trying to put that on him. Like when you mentioned Widening Gyre, that is one of the best, worst Batman relationships ever. I've got the final issue of Widening Gyre is just Batman taking his girlfriend around to different places and acting like a love-struck teenager, and it's the most painful thing to read in the world, where he like brings what was her name,
Silver St. Cloud
up to the Justice League satellite and you're just like, oh, Batman.
You can tell hit Smith though when he wrote it, and I'll stand by this book. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know you love hate watching and everything. I love it. And it was a complete setup for his last, his third thing. Because he had Cacophony, he had Widening Gyre, and now he's going to have his third act.
Okay.
And it was a complete setup for that. But I'll stand by it because I feel like a lot of his inspiration for writing that relationship came from the movie Mask of the Phantasm. I actually just rewatched that recently.
Nice,
and
good connection.
One of the most heartbreaking things in that movie, because it deals with a lot of flashbacks to whenever Bruce was first trying to come up with this Batman persona, and he meets this woman, and he falls in love with her. And at one point, he's looking at a picture of his parents on the wall, and he's crying, looking at it, saying, "It's different now. Please tell me it's different now," because he doesn't want to be Batman. For the first time since he was an 8-year-old boy in an alley with his two dead parents, he suddenly doesn't want to be Batman. He's happy for the first time in his life.
Nice, that's an awesome connection.
Child.
Which brings us to another point. Is there such a thing as the unattainable relationship in the comics?
There is one I can think of, and it's kind of a weird one, but it goes back to Spawn. Al Simmons and Wanda, the base of the woman he came back from the dead for,
and he can't be with her.
Yeah, like them being, because she has a child with his best friend Terry Fitzgerald, and they've got a happy family. And there are times where he takes the skin of Terry, and they have sex and all this stuff, but they can't be together because his presence tears apart her life, puts her in constant.
Exactly. Another good example would be the whole Hulk and Betty Ross.
Right, for sure.
You know, Banner wants so desperately to be with Betty, but he can't because the moment he has his heart rate elevates and he gets angry, then Hulk crush Betty. You know, and with her father constantly hunting him, Thunderbolt Ross. I mean, you have a problem. There's a lot of the unattainable relationships. You have the whole love triangle, as we've brought up before, where there was Scott Summers and Jean Grey and Wolverine, Logan.
Yeah, one of the most well-known love triangles, really.
Where Scott and Jean were always the thing, and Wolverine was always on the sideline, always wanting to be with Jean, and Jean kind of wanted to be with Wolverine, but she was also completely in love with Scott. So the unattainable can also be thrown into the love triangle and aspect as well.
That's the cool thing about the triangles, too, is because I feel like it even splits the readers. I guarantee you there's people who were rooting for Scott, and there's people who were rooting for Wolverine, you know? It wasn't necessarily
It wasn't clear cut.
Exactly. It's not like, oh, Wolverine.
I was always for Wolverine because I always hated Cyclops. Oh,
me too.
See, I'm a huge Cyclops fan. I'm glad that they stayed loyal more or less.
Until Emma came around. Yeah, yeah. And then you have a whole new love triangle.
But at that point, though, Jean was already dead in the comics, so he was allowed to move on to another.
Technically, no.
There was a psychic affair.
There was a psychic affair before she died.
Oh, that's like texting.
I love comics. No,
that means he had impure thoughts.
So that's
with
like
her impure thoughts.
That's the comic version of My Girlfriend Lives in Canada, where it's like, oh, my girlfriend lives in the psychic dream space. You don't know her. It's all good. But I think that what we're touching on, which is really cool, is that comics really do deal fundamentally, and they deal best with archetypes, right? Like they deal with archetypes of a good family. They deal with archetypes of like a love triangle, of a tragic romance, of all these. You can think of a standard sort of type of romance, and comics has something that fits into that slot. You've got someone who's dealing with a lot of romantic tragedy. You can look at like Hawkeye, and you can look at Daredevil mm-hmm. and Marvel mm-hmm. Comics now, who have had a lot of times and they've screwed it up consistently.
Yeah. Hank Pym and Wasp,
mm-hmm. That sort of dysfunctional relationship that keeps going, the push and pull, the I love you, I'm sorry, I've got a substance abuse problem, I punch you, I make a robot double of you, the robot double is evil, comics.
Who can't relate to that? Come on.
The thing that I'm really curious to know from you guys is, do you think, are there representations of comics of relationships in comics that aren't necessarily archetypal and are more realistic? Because, I mean, we're all in relationships. Do you see anything in comics that echoes sort of the rhythm of a, I don't want to pigeonhole it, but like a normal relationship, he said, making the biggest finger quotes.
Well, it's hard to say because I feel like it's always either one extreme or the other. You either have the ones that are kind of in trouble, or you have the Superman Lois Lane
like
having coffee in the morning where it's exactly.
You know what? There's only one that comes to mind. Now, sure, there's Superman and superhero antics around it, but when they are together, I actually see a relationship that transpires like a normal relationship when you take out the comic subtext.
Right, yeah.
Okay, and that's Aquaman and Mira.
Yes, that's a really interesting point.
I can't believe we actually forgot about them until now.
Yeah, I know. Hey, no, we got there. It's about the journey. It's not about the destination.
I mean, it's a little bit of a kind of a Romeo-Juliet backstory. She's from one family that doesn't understand his family and vice versa.
Right.
But when you get to the subtext, when they are together, I mean, they have their squabbles like a normal couple. Mm-hmm. They have their kiss and makeups like a normal couple. And they seem to behave like a normal couple. And really, both of them just want to put the superhero life aside and find somewhere to settle down together. And that's the backbone to their relationship. It's just the superhero side of things just continually sucks them back into it.
And I think that's a really good point is what I think. And again, it's what a relationship means varies from person to person. You know, what I get out of a relationship is different from what everyone else gets out of a relationship. And I think being able to identify that and looking for, key elements, looking for that support that you get from another person or that ability to discuss things through, I think is what we're looking for, which is what I really enjoy about, like I was saying, the Big Bart and Mr. Miracle relationship, is I like that sort of strength that each person gives each other in the relationship. Jeff, how about you? Is there anything?
I don't know. One relationship that it's one of those ones that's always a constant yet never seems to move forward is Black Canary and Green Arrow.
Right.
They even a couple years ago, well, a little more than a couple years ago, I guess now, they even had them get married and they had their own title together, Green Arrow and Black Canary, which lasted a year or two. And it's like, what's so different between them that they can't work if you put them together on the page? But at the same time, they always kind of have this thread tethering them together. Like, I can't picture another female character with Ollie, and I can't really picture another male character with Dinah, unless it's like, a fling or whatever. But as far as actual relationships, when you're thinking of relationships and you name one of them, the other one is the one that comes to mind.
It almost seems like in some cases that there are certain characters that were almost written to be together that way and designed to be together that way, even though they inadvertently weren't.
Right, for sure.
They were created at different times, but when it all boils down to it, it's almost like they have this like you said, an invisible tether that it's almost like if these characters don't get together, there's something completely wrong with these comics. But at the same time,
when they get they,
when they get together, it's like it's you want it so badly that when they get together, it just doesn't work.
It's like a TV show that happens exactly. In television all the time. You know, you've got the two main characters struggling to, you know, be together, and there's all this sexual tension and romantic tension between Castle. Them. And then, and then when they do get together, lo and behold, the show gets canceled like a season or two after that.
It takes a dive in quality.
I stopped watching.
Smallville, for example, is a great example.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And sticking with Superman, I actually stopped watching Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, because of that. Not because I had anything against them actually having Lois and Clark together. It's the name of the show. But it's just, when they got them together, it just...
I really did enjoy Dean Cain as
yes.
Wasn't that marriage like pushed on them because they were doing the comic marriage at the same time? So they said, now you got to get married. And we're like, okay.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it as well. And I think this is a really interesting point. And the key thing about relationships is you think that as much as we like to think that, you know, all these comic characters are fated to be together and there is this invisible tether, there's a writer putting all these stories together. Mm-hmm. There's someone writing and controlling the fate of all these characters. And when I think about relationships in comics, and again, I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about this. I think of, like, it's the subplot. You know, I've got to go fight these giant robots, but, you know, my girlfriend wants me to tape Top Chef. And so how am I going to balance these two?
PVR. I think that's why some of the most successful comic book relationships have been superpowered being normal person.
Yes.
Lois Lane and Superman.
Right.
Peter and Mary Jane. Because you look at any time there's a superhero couple, and there are certain exceptions like Barda.
Yep.
And Scott.
I think it's for them. It's because it's their world is not necessarily.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they're not in just this earth. But I mean, you have, it's like, hold on, I have to go save the world. Don't worry, I'll join you.
Yeah.
You know? So the dishes never get done or whatever.
They're,
you know,
flying and having the discussion. Who's going to pick up the kids? I don't know. Let's just go fight this monster.
There was one relationship I really like only because it's so dysfunctional and they chose to not be together. From Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan and Silk Spectre.
Right, that's a really interesting...
Yeah, the reason I like that is because he says, I'm not coming back at the end of the Watchmen book after killing Rorschach and deciding he's not a part of humanity, and she lets him go because she's with Night Owl, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's just something about that I really liked, because watching those two together, you watch a relationship tear themselves apart because he was becoming different from humanity, and she knew enough to come back and ask for one more favor, and he was okay with that. And I don't know, there's just something about that I really liked, the fact that it was a mutual parting. There wasn't, please stay, I beg of you. It was like, I need you now, can you help me?
Yeah, and it's interesting. And I mean, the thing about Watchmen, it's great. I mean, it's one of the classic comic books of all time. And it's much more deft with the relationship subplots. Like, things weave in and out. It's not necessarily so clearly, like you were saying, Jeff, delineated between superhero world, real world, and emotion, you know, relationship issues, superhero issues. That's a really great, like, example of how to do it really well and really subtly. But you find often a lot of relationship stuff gets pushed to the back. I mean, when you think about things that happen...
Or it's pushed completely in your face.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Or, like, push. Yeah, it's in the back until suddenly something happens. Yeah. Like, I was thinking about, like Roy Harper in the old DC universe.
Oh,
who had,
God, he had a tragic
Who had the worst life in the world. He's the only person who benefited from the DC reboot.
So much.
Aside from the fact that he lost his daughter, which was ridiculous.
I couldn't believe it when I read that.
Yeah, so Roy Harper was Green Arrow's sidekick, and he eventually became his own superhero, sort of forged his identity, started his own life, had a daughter with a supervillain, which is kind of a cool Cheshire back and forth, yeah. And they ended up killing his daughter off for no reason other than
just
shock value. Yeah. It's like, let's crush your daughter.
In this little Justice League miniseries.
Yeah, which was terrible. But it's weird to see relationship issues. The way I see a lot of comics representing relationships issues is something that's in the background until it sort of bubbles up into something big. And
you know, another good example of that is the Colossus Kitty Pride thing.
They're
always together, but it's always just, you know it's there, But it's only really ever brought up when
there's a problem.
There's a problem.
Yeah. And it's weird that that's how comics represent relationships. Everything's great until, you know, it's just, it doesn't exist until there's something dramatic to move the plot forward, which is sort of the nature of comics, right? Like, nobody wants to just read 22 pages of people watching TV, you know? But at the same time, it's interesting that a lot of the conflicts that writers choose to do are sort of negative relationship issues. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like we talked about before,
positive
characters
ones.
Positive, working through things together, facing a challenge mm-hmm. and overcoming it through discussion or through like communal effort.
And again, it comes back to, I think, Mary Jane and Peter Parker being the real kind of beacon for that.
Is part of that though, Jamie? Because of look at society today. I mean, there's never good news in the news,
right?
Right. It's always the negative. It's always the bad. I mean, is it because that we as humans don't want to see a good relationship portrayed?
Or is it
doesn't have the same impact as when the bad stuff happens?
I think we want the sunshine and lollipops ending at our core, but we understand that it might rain that day too. And what I mean by that is we want realistic, because I think we look to some of these examples to solve our own problems. And like, there's... like, hell, there's the one saying, what would Jesus do? What would Spider-Man do? Stuff like that. And because I think in these books we see these fantastic situations play out, but we can find analogs to our own lives. Like, for example, here's one. When I got together with my wife, Blair, I had a real dissociative personality sort of thing, right? Very much that Dr. Manhattan complex, where I don't understand you people anymore, and I don't know why I'm here. Whereas she would ground me to that humanity. And I'm just kind of watching that thing, thinking, all right, I kind of get where this is going, but it's not going to go down this dark, tragic path because I'm being anchored to humanity. So when we look at some of these comic book characters, like seeing Mary Jane and Spider-Man, yeah, it's not that interesting to watch them watching, say, Top Chef. But when they're sitting on top of their apartment in Queens and they're talking it out, saying, you know, Pete, you're going to get killed doing this one day. And that can parallel anything like, do I take this job? Do I give up what I'm loving? Mm-hmm. You know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we want realistic, but we want cool.
It reflects the whole, at what point are we willing to sacrifice everything for our loved one?
Yeah.
And that's a really cool thing about a lot of the comic material, is that we're looking at that as either an analog, like you were saying, to who we are in our relationships, or we're looking at it to a certain extent as like wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of the dual role that a lot of comics serve mm-hmm. when they connect to relationships, that they're the most effective when there's something we can, you know, viscerally connect to emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do one more pass around the table and name off another couple each and call it a night, guys.
All right.
Jeff.
Well, I guess I'll start. And okay, I'm going to break the rules right now because I've got two I want to name. Okay. First is Batman and Wonder Woman, purely because my wife and I had a Batman and Wonder Woman cake topper at our wedding.
Nice.
So it's a sentimental value. And another is a not well-known relationship. It comes from The Uncanny X-Men, number 435. It's Juggernaut and She-Hulk. That had potential.
Oh,
I'm
yes.
disappointed that Dan Slott killed that.
Sorry, Jeff, I just got to jump. Chuck Austin wrote that issue, and Chuck Austin, if you have not done research, has the, again, from a purely hate reading, like reading, it's like watching a slow-mo train just jumping off the tracks and going down a gully, and the train is full of TNT, and you're just waiting for it to crash. Chuck Austin's X-Men exactly like that,
yeah.
Where you're just like, holy crap, he's doing it.
The worst
holy
part,
crap, he's doing it.
The worst part about it isn't even so much that he even did the relationship. It was Dan Slott's excuse as to getting out of it.
Well,
oh, it wasn't really this universe's Jennifer Walters or whatever. It was another dimension on She-Hulk.
You're kidding me, seriously?
That's what Dan Slott said. In an issue of She-Hulk, Wolverine's talking to her and basically says, you and Juggernaut, huh? And she's like, I'm so sick of telling people this. That wasn't me. It was another dimension's She-Hulk. And I'm like... that's worse than the actual relationship.
That's beautiful.
Wow. What about you, Jamie? You got another one?
For me, the one of the other really great representations of a really strong relationship in comics is Garth Ennis's Preacher.
Okay.
If you think of the main character, Jesse, has this on-again, off-again relationship with Tulip, who's this another character from the Southern American states. And they have this really strong bond, and it's really well represented. Garth Ennis is normally known for, like, over-the-top violence and very, you know, scatological craziness. But this is like, his version of the modern Western. And he does a really great job of having these two characters who show it, share a deep emotional bond and communicate with each other really well and have their back and forth moments. But it's sort of like a Watchmen-esque story where it's connected really deeply to it, and it's just fun to watch them go through it.
I think my final one is going to be Storm and Black Panther.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, Storm and Black Panther, the Wakanda King and the X-Men.
Are they still together?
Or is that the one that I think they've just broken up, right?
They're kind of in one of their schnitz.
They're on a break.
They're on a break.
So Storm's got the hate mohawk going on.
I guess. Yeah.
I'm free.
How about
now.
You, Mike?
I really wish I could give you a really deep response because you guys know comics way more than me.
Hey, I went by a cake topper and, you know, a throwaway relationship in an X-Men.
One of the greatest two panel spreads ever.
To break the rule, Commander Shepard, Female Shepard, and Garrus. Would be
nice.
My favorite relationship, just to see how it plays out. For those of you that are video gamers, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If there ever was love in a foxhole, that's where it is. And I love the fact that they're soldiers, and they are lovers, but they're soldiers first. And I really appreciate that. So anyway, guys, we'll probably have a show the week after next. I'm in New Jersey. I can't tell you much more than that, but if considering the podcast you're listening to, you probably have a pretty good idea. So what's our next topic?
Guys, I think we're going to get into the whole discussion of are comics proper literature, and or are they an art form, or are they both? I think there's a lot to be discussed with that one.
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. English teacher time.
All right, so for Beyond the Gauntlet, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with...
Jamie, Aquaman, you cannot marry a woman without gills. You're from two different worlds. Oh, I've wasted my life. McBurney.
And I'm Jeff. I really can't top that. DeHaan.
And I'm Chris. Where the hell did I put that wedding ring? Owner and operator of the Gauntlet.